Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Alive and kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com or you will find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up on the show this morning, therapist Fiona Brennan advises a listener on housing crisis burnout, something many people can identify with, and some great advice coming up. Enya Martin on going from comedy to coaching and the health transformation she has gone on recently. And I'll also be joined by Kerry White to discuss the road less travelled to motherhood, becoming a mother later in life and going solo. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Can I go back to Portugal for another week yet? Now, I am good, but it can be a lot sometimes, can't it? And I find myself wondering why I can't have the energy and headspace I had while I was spending most of my day on a sun lounger by the sea. Now, I'm getting through it. The work commitments, the back to school commitments. We are currently clearing out the house commitments. And in between it all, I'm trying to snatch moments to myself to rest and recharge when I can. When life gets busy, I really try and stay focused on making sure that I'm scheduling in time with my friends, time with my husband, time just for me, just to keep me as sane as possible. So if somebody texts me to say, will we meet for a coffee, will we meet for a walk, or my husband makes a suggestion, I will say yes. You want to say no because you've loads of stuff on, but they're the times you need to say yes even more, and not just accept invitations, but extend them myself. And I got to escape on Friday. I was back in the gorgeous Deerstone Hideaway in Wicklow. What a place. Book a stay if you can. I was there for the day. Maura Rath was hosting an event and it was gorgeous. I've asked Maura to come on the show because she does have a great story to tell. You might know her. She has a brilliant yoga following. She's massive outdoor events that she holds and retreats. And she was also on The Apprentice in the UK last year. She just has a great way about her. So hopefully she'll be in for further chats soon. But that was a lovely day and one that I was certainly not going to say no to. I'm heading to Kilkenny today to host my own wellness day alongside Elaine Nick Raymond, who will lead a hike up Bandon Hill. Her lovely sister Niamh will hold a yoga event. I'm doing a reset workshop as it's such a lovely time of the year as the season begins to change. I know it's hard to get your head around when we didn't really have a massive summer, but it is coming into the autumn. And to take a look at how the year has been, what energy you want to bring into the rest of the year. So I am looking forward to doing that. Today's event sold out in a couple of hours. Numbers were limited, but we were overwhelmed by the response. So we'll definitely do it again soon. I'm delighted that I'm getting outside of Dublin, and Wicklow have kind of been where I've held most of the events. Have been to Galway, have been to Cork, and now Kilkenny. So I'm getting out there. Looking forward to meet any of the listeners who managed to nab a spot. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. I always love to hear from you about what you would like for a wellness day, a retreat somewhere in the country, and maybe I can arrange something close to you very soon. Now, Fiona Brennan is a clinical hypnotherapist and best-selling author. Every month she comes on the show to give advice on a life issue a listener has emailed in. If you would like to feature on a future show, it is all anonymous. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Fiona, you are very welcome back.
Thank you, Claire. Delighted to be here.
And this one is a really interesting one because it's quite topical, isn't it? Let me read it and then we can get stuck into it. So what our listener says is, I am struggling to buy a home and losing the will to continue. I've been house hunting in Dublin over 8 months and every house I go to has gone for over 10 to 12%. And they're all properties which need work. It's just draining me with working full time, being a single parent and trying to find somewhere within my budget. I just don't have the energy. You can just feel the stress, can't you, of juggling it all. And I often wonder about the doom and gloom. I know we have to report the realities of what's going on and be aware of it and push our policymakers for better. But when all you hear is housing crisis and cost of living crisis, it doesn't help people to stay motivated and stay hopeful for their own futures.
Very, very true, Claire. I mean, to be honest, I think there's been a housing crisis in Ireland for 700 years. You know, when you think about it, it's just got worse and worse and worse for people. And it's at its height now, really, for so many people, young people in particular, and, you know, trying to buy your first home. It's a huge psychological trigger in terms of stress and anxiety. And I think that we need to be aware of how hard it is in terms of, you know, you don't want to stay stuck, as you say, in that place of doom and gloom. But there does need to be a space where you're able to say, this is tough. It is hard. This particular listener, my goodness, you know, already, if you just hear, you know, working full time and single parent, those two components in themselves are enough for any person to try to manage. And then you put in this third component, which is really an essential part of our physical, mental, emotional, every sense of well-being is a house, is somewhere to live. It's essentially a human right that we have somewhere that we can call home. It doesn't necessarily that we have to own that home, but we do have to feel a sense of security that we're not going to be evicted, moved on, or not able to stay there. So this is going quite deep in terms of the impact it has on a feeling of rootlessness, let's say, or feeling insecure in terms of that sense of belonging, of what home means and how hard it is to be able to put down those roots and to make that security. And essentially, you know, when you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we know that the first, you know, that having a home, shelter, along with food, along with you know, feeling safe, etc., is in that very, very first sort of level, if you like, in the pyramid. So when you're stuck at that, it's really hard to actually move forward because all of your energy is being zapped into just trying to meet that basic need. And it is a basic need, but it's also something that, unfortunately, through, you know, a lack, as you say, of sort of political will, it's become a personal issue, you know, so that it's a political issue that has a really human impact on so many people. And this listener, I think it's really helpful as well when we talk about compassion. And, you know, I often come back to compassion because it's a sense of recognizing that this is difficult, but it's also recognizing that she's not alone, you know, and I think that can be helpful in just the awareness that, you know, sometimes you can look out of the world and you can see your friends on social media, or whatever, moving into their new house and they seem to have it all sorted. And it can feel really, really isolating and frustrating that you're the one who's still stuck and hasn't managed to make it happen. So I think that taking that personal component out of it, that, you know, essentially this is not your fault. You're in a situation that is incredibly difficult. You're in a situation where you have responsibility, but you don't have control. And that's where we can really feel depleted. You know, when she says that she's no energy, she's losing the will to live. That's totally understandable in this situation. So when we are met with challenges like this, what do we do, right? We need to essentially really dig quite deep, I would say, in terms of taking back what control we can in a situation that feels so big, so out of our control. What are the things here on a practical level and also on that psychological component that you could do to improve the situation? And, you know, like I said, I think this has been something that's been there for so many years for people. I personally have, you know, like I joke about it, you know, because we use humor sometimes to try to take away the stress and strain of things. But myself and my husband would talk about the accommodation situation, right, as a major stressor in terms of how, you know, I can relate to this. I've been through this. I've been in positions where I've had to move out of rented accommodation at short notice with a child in school. It's really, you know, it's a very, very difficult thing to have to manage. And you need really good, strong emotional, mental health and resilience.
Because we get an idea in our heads, don't we, that the way to win at life is, like, give or take, you know, get through school, get training or a qualification, get a job, get a relationship, get a house, a home. And like, that's just the way it should go in that linear fashion. And if you're not following along that, then somewhere along the line, you're not a good adult. You're not doing it right. And we need to bring in that kind of flexibility and compassion that sometimes, as you say, it's going to be outside of our control. But sometimes other things get in the way, like, you know, being a single parent, obviously that's changed the setup a little bit. So that might delay certain things for a few years, like saving for a deposit because there's going to be one income, things like that. Like, life happens. And I don't think we should feel like we are failing when it doesn't follow a pattern that I don't even know who really set this out. We don't have to stick to any sort of pattern.
Exactly. I called it the conventional calendar in my second book, the Self-Love Habit. It's almost like a ticking box exercise, you know, where you're good at school, then you go to college and you just keep going all the way through. And it's almost like what society sort of expects of you. And then that pressure that you feel that you put yourself under, you know, you get married, then you buy a house, or you buy a house, then get married, or, you know, but you're ticking those boxes. And when you don't tick them, you can feel in some way inadequate. And I think that essentially, that is so, so toxic and so unfortunate. It particularly happens in the 30s, is that the most box ticking, if you like, happens in that decade between 30 and 40 in terms of children, in terms of houses, etc. So what I would say here is, when we're met with a challenge like this, you know, that is out of our control in terms of, you know, unfortunately, the system is as it is, right? And yes, hopefully things are going to improve and we'll always be optimistic in terms of things starting to shift. But at the moment, this is the reality that this lady is facing. Every house she goes to is outbid. And that is like banging your head off the wall. So I can really have great empathy for her. So in terms of like what can be done, the first thing I would say is there any sense of being able to make a compromise anywhere? Is there any way that she could perhaps look at shifting her her expectations, you know? And this is something I've had to do personally as well, in terms of maybe it's a case of somewhere smaller, a different location, maybe it's outside Dublin. Like, what can she actually do to take back some control of this? And I know, I don't know the full picture, and it's never as simple or as black and white as that, but just really, really look at it with a sort of fresh lens, because you've got your first priority has to be your own physical and mental health. So if something is a threat to that, which is this chronic stress of looking for somewhere that at the moment may not arise, then what can you do to sort of take steps that protect yourself? One of the practical things as well, in terms of like time spent on it, you know, because it can go down like a rabbit hole, you know, you can go on to Daft, or, you know, and you can just keep looking and hoping and hoping and seeing, and you can just get completely overwhelmed. So time over task is a great way to look at that. Say, okay, it's now 5 o'clock, or, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to spend 1 hour looking at this, and that's it. And then step away, because when you spiral into that kind of almost, and it's very understandable, you're trying to solve a big problem, but it can become obsessive and it can become all pervasive. It can take over your mind. So you want to be really clear with yourself. Okay, you know, time over task. That's a really good thing, to be honest, for anything that you're doing. Because again, with work, you know, you might not finish the task, but at the same time, you want to know that's the time that I'm going to give it to. And if I need to come back to it, then that's how it is. That's how it's going to have to be. Because we need to really really look after ourselves. Like our greatest asset is our own physical and mental health, as I said, our emotional well-being. So when you're challenged, this is time for this listener to actually say, what are my parameters? What am I prepared to do? Don't let go of you know, whatever self-care practices that she has, that she can put into her life, whether it's 5 minutes in the morning of meditation or a walk or whatever she has. Hold on to those things and hold on to them really tightly, because she needs them to get through this.
Yeah, to lean into some of those wellness practices that we do sometimes scoff at and think, sure, how is that going to solve the housing crisis? But starting with your day with a meditation, starting with positive affirmations, doing some breath work, mm-hmm. going for a walk on the beach, screaming, you know, alone on a deserted beach or forest yeah. that you're frustrated with the housing crisis, and then getting back in your car and going, now that's that done, and going home and having a nice nourishing meal with your child. You know, you have to make sure you're filling your cup a little bit to help yourself get through it.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful, Claire. That's exactly spot on, I would say. So we're visualizing a lovely home for this listener and wishing her the best and energy and everything to her.
Brilliant advice as always, Fiona. Thank you so, so much. And Fiona is moving her weekly newsletter to Substack. And each week you can receive information and audios to sleep well, release anxiety and feel powerful. There is a special introductory offer available at the moment. So for that and to find out more about Fiona and her work, go to thepositivehabit.com.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, my next guest was approaching her 50s when she made the life-changing decision to pursue solo motherhood through a double donation. She's since given birth to her daughter and hasn't looked back. But the path to solo motherhood can be an emotional roller coaster, to say the least, which is why she is now helping others to navigate that path with so many fears and uncertainty within it. Kerry White, Motherhood Clarity Coach, joins me in studio now. Kerry, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Claire. It's lovely to be here.
So take us back to you in your late 40s, where you were at and your thought process around becoming a parent.
I was at that stage where I just never could have imagined that I would be. All my life, I presumed I'd be married, have three kids. But life didn't work out like that. So it really was a journey that took me 10 years to the time when I was 48, when I made my decision that I was going to pursue it. So it was like, it was just such a roller coaster. And I guess I never really gave up on it. Like, things weren't looking good, obviously, at my age. And I had considered solo motherhood at around 41, 42. But I just couldn't let go of the dream that everything was just going to align and I was going to get my fairy tale. And I suppose I had my head buried because I couldn't imagine it. You know, it's like most of us. I always imagine my life as meeting my soulmate and I get my happy ever after. And so I really had to go on a whole journey to get that clarity that I needed. And I guess I'm somebody who works very well under pressure. So there was a very small window of opportunity. And when I was faced with that tiny window and I looked at my options then, and then I suppose I got ready through a whole process.
Mm. And when you say there was a tiny window, what were you exploring at that stage? What were you even researching, be it online or otherwise?
Well, I kind of skipped the traditional IVF with my own eggs, because I had kind of missed that boat. Most clinics have a cutoff age of about 42. And I had been researching, I suppose, through, you know, from that point onwards, the possibility of conceiving through donor eggs. So that's basically using the eggs of another woman who's much younger through a whole process. And I had kind of reconciled that. It obviously wasn't my first choice. And I looked into the science as well behind it. There's a whole process called epigenetics, which I won't go into it now, obviously, but I didn't need to know the science based process of what happens when a woman is pregnant with another woman's eggs. But it did help me, I suppose, reconcile that there was going to be some kind of a DNA connection, a genetic connection with this little baby. So I had reconciled that possibility of conceiving through donor eggs and, of course, donor sperm, because I was solo. That wasn't really an issue for me. And it was the whole, and then the other bit was, you know, can I do this alone? I had to totally kind of shift my way of thinking and my perspective and dig deep and question what motherhood meant to me and just reshape that whole dream that I had.
And as you said, it was a 10-year sort of journey, because I'm sure around the age of 38, you feel that clock ticking. You start thinking from, I mean, I remember even feeling under certain pressure when I got married at 30, like, how much time do I have left? Who knows what my fertility is going to be when we start on this journey? What issues have happened with oral contraception? You know, you've all of this going on in your head. So the closer you get to 40, the more you're thinking, you know, how viable is all of this? So obviously you had that thought process going on, but you not pushed it aside, but decided, let's wait, let's see. This could all happen in 6 months. I could meet someone tomorrow and, you know, everything will work out. But that never left you, that idea of becoming a mom, that wanting to become a mother. And we don't often... I mean, we do hear about people with fertility struggles. I do get that. But we're starting to really change the conversation about what it means to be a woman. And we're thankfully saying you don't have to become a woman to become or you don't have to become a mother to be a woman. And people can choose. But I thought it was interesting reading about you. Some people are child free through circumstance. And that's not really a cohort we hear a lot about, because there's a lot of shame and stigma around that. It's very brave of you to talk about it.
Thank you, Claire, and for mentioning it, because, yeah, that's something I guess I really, really want to highlight, is that cohort of women who are childless through circumstances. And Ireland has a very, very high rate of women over the age of 45 who are childless, and a large cohort are indeed through circumstances. They haven't met the right person is one of those big reasons. And there's other reasons too. So, yeah, I did feel that I was in this no man's land, and it was very isolating. And I just felt so alone in my feelings and in my angst about it. And there was nowhere really, like, there, you know, I wasn't childless through infertility. There wasn't really anyone to talk to in that space. And there was a sense of shame, and that's internal as well. It's those feelings of, I'm not a mother, and I, you know, how did this happen? How have I made such wrong choices? So, yeah, it's complex, and it's very difficult to separate motherhood and partnership, romantic partnership. It's very hard to unwrap it. So that was a big journey, and I know it is for many women equally. So for me, it was a huge thing to, you know, I suppose, as you said, get brave and say, I can do this on my own. I, you know, examined myself very closely with support. And it took the time that it took, which was, you know, almost 10 years from the time I heard my clock ticking from my mid-30s, late-30s. And I just never gave up on that hope. And that longing was always there, that I always wanted to be a mother. And that's why it's so emotional. I mean, I still sometimes pinch myself that I have my daughter, Freya, that she's there, that, touch wood, I'm well. Obviously, I am much older than a lot of women I meet, but I'm not alone. And I am so passionate now about helping other women who might find themselves in that space.
So talk to us about the process to gorgeous Freya arriving. So you were going to use double donation, but not a surrogate. You were going to carry this pregnancy.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have been accepted. I found a clinic overseas, and it was the right clinic for me. I had spoken with a few, and for different reasons, this clinic just came to me at the right time. And so surrogacy was never an option. I said, if I can carry a baby, that would be amazing. And they wouldn't have accepted me if they didn't think that I was healthy enough to carry a baby. So I conceived when I was 49. And it was very easy. It's much easier on the body than traditional IVF with your own eggs, because you're using the eggs of another woman, and it's just much more straightforward. The fertility treatment, basically like intensive HRT, and that agreed with me. I felt very well. I felt very healthy. I felt very excited from the time I made my decision. It worked on the second transfer. So the first one, I had a biological pregnancy, which was a good prognosis that things were working and that I was receptive to carrying a baby. And I was very hopeful then going back. And the second time, it worked. And I felt really, really well during my whole pregnancy. I'm not going to go again, but I did feel amazingly well and very lucky that everything worked well. So I was 2 months short of 50 when Freya was born, which was just before COVID, as you know. And I was just so happy. And I didn't really believe she was coming until she was born. I even delayed announcing, you know, that I was pregnant, because it just felt so surreal to me in such a wonderful way. I couldn't believe that it was my turn now. After such a long wait.
And what were the reactions of other people like? Mm. Because you fell foul, I think, of societal expectations all along the way. But lucky enough, you got to the age of 48 and thought, no, I still have this longing and I'm going to explore other options. But I'm sure other people were not where you were at. Mm. So how did other people receive the news?
Well, when I had been thinking about this, Claire, from my early 40s, I was sharing it with different people. And because I'm open and I like to run things by people. And so based on that, I didn't do it then. I didn't follow that calling then to do it alone. Because, you know, a lot of people carry their own fears, judgments, doubts and all of that kind of thing, advice. So I got very clear that this was the path for me through a series of different things, including coaching. I was doing a coaching course and I found the right psychotherapist for me. And that kind of unlocked, I suppose, those answers that I was going to do this and that I was excited about it and I could do it. And I kept it to myself, apart from a few people who I knew kind of would be alongside with me doing it, if you know what I mean. Because I didn't want to be under the influence of people's fears, judgments, including my mother, who's a very important person in my life. But I chose not to tell her till I was after 2 months pregnant, because I didn't want to be influenced by all of her feelings around it. So I treated it like a sacred journey. And when I was ready to start sharing it with people, I did. And I mean, there were hoots of laughter in my family. I remember when I told some people in my family, they just couldn't believe it. That's okay. Everybody has opinions. I suppose due to my age, mainly, people just couldn't believe it. Like, a lot of people my age might be grandmothers, basically. But look, it's wonderful. I'm so glad that I found that courage and I got that clarity to try. And that was very important for me as well, Claire, that I got to the point where I knew that I had to try. I had to get out of my comfort zone and take this window of opportunity, because if I didn't, it would have been gone and I would have really regretted it.
And that's why I'm so grateful to you for speaking publicly about it, because you do have to take on people's judgment, fear. Mm-hmm. But even in that, you're still a beacon of light for other people. So I'm sure even people, I don't know anything about your mum, but it does shift people, especially now. I'm sure she is obsessed with Freya. So yes, you're taking people on a journey with you. That doesn't make it easy for you, but you are a beacon of light for other people. And you give people permission to listen to their gut and reach out for whatever it is that they are looking for. Mm. And something that really struck me when you were talking earlier, I think a lot of people who perhaps do have children or do have families, we tend to take that for granted. I'm sure people were very flippant about parenthood. Oh my God, you're going to throw away your independent life and your sleep. And it's underestimating the power of what it is to be a parent. I'm sure you came up against that a lot.
Do you know, that's such a lovely way that you put that. And it is. And some of the comments from people, you know, when I was in that space of, you know, the sadness and the grief, because when you have that longing to be a mother and you feel it's not going to happen, it is a kind of a grief. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that to anybody who might be in that, you know, in that space. So, yeah, flippant comments like, well, sure, look, having kids isn't everything in life, or sure, you're mad, you have a great life traveling, and what do you want to be tied down for? Yes. Yeah, so as you say, there is a kind of a taking for granted of the state of parenthood. And I know I talk about motherhood, but, you know, I don't want to exclude men. And that's very important as well. My experience is motherhood, obviously. So it is something that I hope I never take for granted. Obviously, now I'm wrapped up in all the usual things of parenting a 4.5-year-old child. And it's still magical. And every day, you know, despite the humdrum, daily routine and the challenges sometimes, I still never lose sight of the fact that it's something completely sacred. And I'm so blessed that I got my daughter, Freya, and I'll always be grateful, yeah, to all my helpers who showed up. And yeah.
And that's just the magic of life, isn't it? There's a couple of times it's coming to me now in my life where I've really gone with my gut and I've really felt that something was for me. And these things don't always work out, but on the couple of occasions that they have, I mean, you can nearly feel the fairy dust around you. It's just, you must have been on cloud nine in those early days of having a baby, being a mom. These were the things that you had dreamt of and now you were living them.
Yes, absolutely. I was on cloud nine. And then, of course, with some feelings of, you know, the overwhelm of the responsibility. And, you know, it's not in a normal way. It is unusual. You know, the circumstances are a little bit complex, obviously. And I'll always be open with Freya about her beginnings and her origins. And that's part of her story and of our story. But yeah, it is so magical. And, you know, and I suppose part of my journey to get to that place was to look back at times when I'd made decisions that were maybe difficult, or some people might say were brave. But for me, they were just right. It was following my gut. It's, yeah, as you said, it's a big part of it. Yeah.
Have you made a decision about how often you're going to share your story? I mean, the school gate is obviously going to be calling soon. And as you said, you're going to meet other parents that are different generation. Do you feel the need to explain yourself like this over and over again? Or are you just going to say, hi, I'm Freya's mom, and keep going?
It's interesting you ask that question, and things are unfolding, I suppose. I want to be open, and there's a few, say, moms, like she's in a preschool, who I've befriended through the kids primarily, and then we've become friends. So I would be very open with those people. I'm not hiding anything. I never want to hide anything. And if anybody ever wants to ask me anything, or if anybody at the school gates wants to say, hey, I heard your story, or, you know, I'm happy to share. It's not a secret. So I guess I just pick my moments, and is it appropriate to share? But like most people, I'm a mom. There's some extra challenges. I don't think it's age related, personally, but maybe sometimes I'm a bit conscious of my age, because there aren't many mums of 54 who have a 4-year-old, 4.5-year-old. But it's becoming more and more common now. And, you know, I'm just a mom, like every other mom, with the same issues and challenges. And Freya is thriving. She has a lot of very important people in her life, and it's great just to see her growing. And I bring in the story of how she came to be, and how I was dreaming about her for such a long time, and how I had to get the aeroplane, and I have a photo book with the whole journey. So she's getting older now, so it does make some sense to her. And I also know some other women, quite a few now. I'm building the community of other women who have gone down the road as well to have their babies solo. And that's great. It's great for me. It's great for us. And it's great for Freya and the other kids to know that, you know, this way of making a family is more normal now, that they're not the only ones.
And your work as a motherhood clarity coach, is that all for solo motherhood, or is it a myriad of ways to motherhood?
So the most of the women who will find me are in that space of being solo. But in fact, there's quite a few who come to me as well where they might be in a relationship. So there's different types of scenarios. They might be in a relationship and natural pregnancy hasn't occurred and they might want to explore their options. Maybe they've heard of donor conception, but they're kind of afraid of it, or they just want to, you know, a little bit of inspiration or just to know some more facts about that, that way of doing it. Also, there are some women who might be in a relationship and their partner might not be 100% on board. So there's all different scenarios. There's, I've spoken to many women who are in a lesbian partnership, and then couples, and then heterosexual couples, and then the majority will be solo women as well.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
And you just hold space for people then, because as you found yourself, you want to be able to go to somebody, talk this out, get a bit of clarity on your own thoughts and feelings and get the research and information, because it can be a difficult and lonely road.
Yes, exactly. It can be a very difficult and lonely road. And I suppose to have somebody who's walked the path before them, and I'm not there, it's very important I say this, Claire, I'm not there to convince people to go down the road of motherhood or parenthood, but I'm there to help them uncover maybe the things that might be stopping them going down that road. I work as a coach, so I use coaching tools, which helps the people to accompany the people to find the answers themselves. So I'm not there to advise. But if I always say to people, if they want to ask me about my own personal experience, they can. They can ask me anything if that's going to be helpful to them, because it is, you know, it's not that common, I suppose, to have all of those factors, you know, the age, going solo and using double donors. So, yeah, so I'm there to hold space and to support people that might be in that space of just a lot of confusion or a lot of turmoil, because it can be a very confusing place to be. And yeah, so there can be all sorts of emotions there, and it can be a journey like it was for me, for many of these people.
And where can people find you, Kerry?
So my website is Kerry, K-E-R-R-Y, at kerrywellbeing.com, or I am on Instagram. So yeah, I hope to hear from people, and I'm happy to have a chat with people if they just want to get in touch and we can see where they're at. If they want to give me a call, I'm happy to offer that.
Kerry Wise, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Claire. My pleasure.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Enya Martin is a stand-up comic who made her name posting comedy videos online. More recently, her social media posting documented a health journey she went on, which led her to qualify as a personal trainer to share all she had learned. She joins me in studio now. Enya, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into your whole fitness journey and your training as a personal trainer, tell me a bit about you and comedy and all of that kicking off.
Yeah, so I got into the comedy around 2014 through content online. I started putting up sketches on Facebook. There's only kind of like a handful of people doing videos back then. It was kind of in its infancy. And now everyone and their nanny is making videos on TikTok and Facebook and Instagram. And then a couple of years after, I think around 2017, I progressed down onto stage. I got my arm twisted to do 5 minutes in a comedy club, and I was absolutely rattling doing it. I didn't. I actually realised how much I enjoyed it. Even though I veered away from it for so long, I was happy doing it on the laptop with a camera in my box bedroom. And then, yeah, now I mainly make my income from stand-up, and I make a full-time salary just making people laugh.
And did you have a plan in your box bedroom?
I called it Giz a Laugh, the page Giz a Laugh, because I didn't want to be tied to one character. You know, because then you're limited. So it was always going to be a series of sketches based on kind of like, you know, stereotypes, just general things, relationships, friends and stuff. And I did always kind of have a seed planted that I would like to see it on TV at some stage, like a sketch show. But then, you know, obviously it evolved and things change, and I would never change this for the world. Like, I love walking for myself. I love kind of steering my ship, and no one else does that for me. But to where I'm sitting now, I did imagine it. But at the time, I thought it's going to be longer than I think, you know. But I still stayed at it, and now I do work for myself, and it's great.
And I imagine that working nights like that, and I know working for myself as well, sometimes you can be lacking in routines that can help with a healthy lifestyle, that, you know, you're working 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, Tuesdays and Thursdays are your gym nights, whatever. That a lot of days can roll into one. Do you think that impacted on where you were at before you started your big health fitness journey?
Oh yeah, like before I got into the gym and stuff, part of me getting into the kind of health and fitness lifestyle, even as a client, was I was in the spotlight and I wanted to look after my appearance because it's one less thing people can ridicule you over. But also, eat good, feel good, eat crap, feel crap. And I found that my lifestyle was, you know, I was a binge drinker, I was eating fast food all the time, I was going to bed at all hours, waking up at all hours. My lifestyle at the time, but I didn't know any different, was a bit hectic. So I remember looking in the mirror one day. I was actually doing an internship because I did marketing and advertising in college. And I was like, I need to change. A guy across the road from me that I went to school with opened up a gym. I started training with him then. I actually realised how much I enjoyed it. Because when you're on the road and you're doing shows, like you're coming home at like 11, 12, 1 o'clock at night, and you're stopping in garages, petrol stations, you know, eating fast food, and you're sleeping then till late in the day because you got home late. So yeah, I needed to get my life in order. So it actually started when I walked with my first PT. He actually opened my eyes to be like, oh, you don't have to eat plain chicken and broccoli 3 days a week, or, you know, 3 times a day. And it's just about protein intake and staying in a calorie deficit. And I learned so much from him that I actually wanted other women to see how simple it actually is, and not to be kind of following these toxic diet trends and stuff, you know, because I was one of them too. I was one of those women.
But you wanted to fully train yourself as a personal trainer. Why did you want to take that step? Because you had a platform to share this information, but did you really want to go under the bonnet and understand what was happening?
Yeah, I ended up doing a course then. I'd worked with my own trainer for a couple of years and I was like, do you know what? I actually love doing things that I'm passionate about, and that was comedy was one of them. And I became really passionate about it because I understood it. And I didn't realise that I was going to love it as much as I did when I started doing it. I genuinely just done it to make a change for myself. But then when I seen, this is actually quite simple, like when it's broken down in layman's terms, and there's so many women out there overcomplicating it, and obviously they don't know any different, that I want to try teach them. So then I used Instagram, and I set up my own coaching page and just started making videos as well on that. And just to get the message across, because that is the medium that people are educating themselves through, you know, TikTok. I still learn a lot of podcasts now, social media in general. But yeah, that's why I took it up. And now I make a full-time salary out of that as well.
Yeah, so you're juggling the two and you've actually got loads on. You have a book coming out, you have a Vicar Street gig. How are you finding juggling it all and still being able to maintain your health and fitness at the centre of that?
Yeah, well, I'm not an idle woman, I'll put it that way. Sometimes I take on too much and it can get overwhelming, but I wouldn't have it any other way. Like, you know, there's days where there's probably 2 days a week there that I'm not in the gym, and I go religiously. It's part of my identity now. And sometimes I'm scratching my head and I'm like, what do I do? Like, I don't know what to do with myself today, because, you know, it's part of my routine. But I just have, structure is so important. Routine is so important. Like, I have to have a plan going into my day. Sometimes I do struggle, like, wearing the comedy hat and then wearing the PT hat. Like, they're polar opposites, you know. It's not like I'm a PT and I started my own clothing brand. They are quite similar. But I'm a comic 1 minute and then I'm a PT the other. But I try to bring it into my content online, my coaching page online, my personality. And that is one of the toughest parts. It's the content for both pages.
And obviously, stand-up is taking parts of your everyday and then spinning it to be something funny that we in the audience then are relating to and laughing along with, because we're all pretty much going through the same sort of things. Comedians are just so brilliant at noticing it and crafting it into something. So are you going to be talking about health, fitness, the gym? Has that started to become part of your content?
So, like, obviously I don't talk about clients or anything on stage, but I use myself as an example. It's actually in my new show. I talk about how I went through a transformation and how in this country, or in this world now, we just take shortcuts for everything. So when someone hasn't seen you in a long time, the first thing they say to you is, where did you go to get it done? And it's like, no, I actually lost it, you know, the right way. It's just like, you know, people go abroad to get surgeries and stuff. But yeah, I just use myself as an example, or else I'll, you know, use a friend as an example. Oh, she came to me for help and this is what I told her, and she was like, oh, well, I've been doing X, Y, and Z, and You know, because you do, you get people coming up to you. That's what I used to look like 2 years ago. Yeah, didn't I? And I'd never bring that husband over. Didn't I, John? Didn't I used to look like that? Yeah, I'm wanting to keep fit. Now I am.
It's gas, isn't it? And there's so much misinformation out there, isn't there? I sometimes feel, presenting this show now for 5 years, I'm in a bit of a health and wellness bubble. So I'm meeting people that are living and breathing health and well-being every single week. But you say a lot of clients come to you and they're under eating, mm-hmm. and they don't realise that if they feel their body better, they could feel much better in themselves. And then that could lead them to make more healthy choices and you know, maybe exercise that little bit more, have better relationships, better sleep. But people just don't really know that.
I've often come across friends and I ask them out for food, like it could be 7 in the evening. And I'm like, actually, you've probably already eaten at this stage, have you? No, I haven't eaten since 11 o'clock this morning. And I'm like, how do you forget to eat? Like, it's actually part of my day. I plan my day around when I'm going to eat. And, you know, not in a bad way, as if like I'm obsessed with it. But if you fuel yourself efficiently, you're going to have the energy to function properly. If you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of other people. You can't pour from an empty cup. And what happens sometimes is I think some people let their job, you know, that their parent life consume them so much that they actually forget feeding yourself is actually a priority. It is. You know, for energy, cognitive function, hormone regulation, everything. I think sometimes they don't realise how important it is until they actually get hunger pains. Like, I think, you know, that's just a surface problem, but there's so much underneath that there's just so many reasons why you need to be feeding yourself 3 times a day. You know, sticking to the same meal times to regulate your hunger. It's just overlooked so much. I don't think people realise how important it actually is. And I was guilty of that. I used to wake up and have a bowl of cereal for breakfast. No protein whatsoever. And then the next time I would eat would probably be 5 or 6 in the evening. And then I'd snack my way through the day. And I felt crap and I slept crap and I had no energy and I was lethargic and I was lazy. And when I actually started fueling myself properly, I could never look back now. Maybe when I'm on holiday, I let loose a bit, but I just couldn't go back to their night and day, the differences in a sense of feeling, you know.
And you mentioned the Enya you were before was kind of caught up in diet culture, like many women are, like I was myself, that we're always trying to cut calories, lose a bit of weight, gain a bit of weight. You know, and you just get stuck in this cycle and it's not really looking at nourishing your body and fueling yourself correctly. What do you know now that you didn't know then?
Well, trying to lose weight the fast way is actually the slow way, because you're going to just keep coming to cul-de-sacs. You're going to keep burning out. You're going to keep you're just going to suffer with hunger pains all the time. You're going to be fatigued. It's not the correct way of doing things. Slow and steady wins the race. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And I used to be guilty of, you know, eating probably 800, 900 calories a day because I wasn't aware of like what a calorie deficit was. I didn't know what a TD calculator was to find out what your correct calories are for the person of your height, weight, age and level of activity. You know, I didn't know what protein sources were, nothing. I would just probably copy off someone's diet online or a friend. And everyone has a different lifestyle. So everyone requires a different amount of food and they have to eat differently. You know, that's one thing I know as well with a lot of women. They copy off the next door neighbour or their work colleague. And it's like, that woman has kids or that woman might be a student, has no responsibilities, has all the time in the world to go to the gym. You have 3 kids, you have a mortgage, you don't have as much time as her. Why are you copying her diet and her lifestyle? That's why it's not working, you know. You have to find something that suits you because you can sustain that long term. And I used to be guilty of having the plain chicken fillets, the broccoli, you know, walking the legs off myself, spending hours on a treadmill, and it just never got me anywhere. So I hired a PT and they gave me a program, and invest in it, invest yourself. If you can spend X amount of money on the weekends and takeaways and alcohol, you can put some money aside to take care of yourself and prioritize yourself. You won't regret it.
You did a photo shoot, a big fitness photo shoot, and I don't know whether it was suggested to me on Instagram or how I found it. And I had been to see you in the comedy club a couple of years ago. I can't even remember when. And you had really transformed how you looked. And lots of people say, geez, you were grand there. And of course you were. But to get to that level of fitness and strength is a huge undertaking. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I love doing things that old me would never dream of doing, you know, and I was obviously very shy in school. Now look at me now, I'm on stage doing comedy, and I was always a very lazy person, hated exercise, hated PE, was always picked last. I would always take shortcuts for everything. And then I got into the health and fitness lifestyle and I took on a challenge. I had done one originally last year. It was a short one, it was only 9 weeks. And I kind of dipped my toe in the water to see what it was like. And then I did one this year and it was 19 weeks. So what it is people are always like, what are you doing a photo shoot for? Like, what do you mean fitness photo shoot? Basically what you do is bodybuilders, before they stepped on stage, they wanted to photograph how they looked before they competed. And that's where a fitness photo shoot evolved from. So now people do it. It's like a step before stepping on stage. You don't actually compete. So for 5 months, you are rigid with your diet. You're in a calorie deficit. You're doing cardio. You're doing your steps. You're doing your workouts to shape your body. And, you know, you can't have any alcohol because why would you? It's just going to show up on photo shoot day. You don't have any takeaways. You can make your own one, but it has to be tracked. No eating out in restaurants. You have to track your own food, cook your own food. It's very regimental. And then on the D-Day, you go into this photo shoot studio. It's up in Belfast. And Stephen Black is the name of the photographer. And he's really, really good at helping you pose and stuff. And you are ripped to bits. Like, you are shredded. Now, just disclaimer, you couldn't walk around looking like that all year round. Like, it's unsustainable because you have to take your body to like a place it's never been before. Your mental resilience is tested. You're living like a monk nearly, you know. It's just the 1% of the population would only be able to do this. And I set myself that challenge to do it. And I came through the other side. But visualization is a huge part of it. Visualizing yourself on the day, you know, when someone offers you a piece of cake, nope, that's going to show up on photo shoot day. If I have that cake, if I skip cardio, it's going to show up on photo shoot day. It's just you against the world. It really is, because no one else understands what you're going through other than your coach.
You also get spray tanned within an inch of your life. Is that specific tan for these photos? Because it's quite dark, isn't it?
Yeah, they recommend you go dark just because it contours you more. And look, everyone looks great with a tan, no matter what body fat percentage you have. Everyone looks great. It just makes you feel that bit more confident, but it does contour every muscle on your body, because you would look very different now if you were just kind of pale going into it. You wouldn't look as defined.
And how did you feel on that day, or do you feel different on the day to when you see the photographs?
It was an overwhelming feeling, because I remember looking in the mirror thinking, you left no stone unturned. Like, you done everything that was asked of you. You didn't take shortcuts. You didn't take the easy way out. Like, giving up was never an option. Never an option. Unless I was seriously injured or very, very ill. But it was just never an option. I wanted to see this through to the end. So it was I felt very proud, like I had achieved something big, because again, old me would never dream of doing something like that. I used to look at people doing things like that and think, are they a psychopath? Like, what is wrong with them? So that I actually done something like that lasted nearly 5 months, and I stuck to my guns. I didn't give in to temptation. And you're looking at yourself in the mirror thinking, I'll probably never see myself this lean again, but wow, like, this is what's been under the bonnet. Because I was working on it for like 2 years, you know, trained in the gym. I started at 70 kg when I started working with my online coach, and I was 52 that day on the photo shoot day. Like, that was over 2 years, you know.
And as you mentioned, part of your health and fitness journey has been to step away from diet culture, to fuel yourself correctly, to focus on how you feel, the mental health elements of what you were getting out of all of that, and going to the gym. So how did you navigate between that and this big sacrificing focus on this photo shoot?
Yeah, it's definitely a separate animal. I wouldn't advise someone do it unless they, you know, were working with a coach and they did a regular transformation. I did that. I did a regular transformation with my coach because it's a huge undertaking. And I know a couple of people who've done it with kids and with a full-time job. And I'm in a privileged position. I don't have kids. I work for myself. I can kind of pick my own hours. It's a very, very time-consuming process. Like, I mean, I did not have a life. I didn't. And you have to just structure your day. Everything is revolved around when you're going to do your cardio, when you're going to do your steps, cooking your meals at the same time every day, like, so you can regulate your hunger. It's a big undertaking. And if anyone was ever thinking of doing it, like, it's so time consuming. That was probably the biggest stressor. It takes over your life, but you accept that going into it. So when I was lucky when I was doing it that I didn't have an awful lot of shows on. But if I did have the odd show, I would have to bring my meal in a lunchbox. Like, I can't eat on the fly, so I'd like pre-cook maybe my pasta bolognese or something. I did have everyday foods. It would just have to be portion controlled. And I'd be eating it in the car, like in the car park before I go in to do my show, or else afterwards.
What about the come down from all of that? Because as you said, you can't live like that. You want to live a life. You want to meet your friends for dinner. You know, you don't want to be constantly weighing your food and weighing yourself. How did you get back to where you are now?
Okay, so the hardest part, obviously, one aspect is doing it, But I found the hardest part is the aftermath, because you get used to seeing yourself like that and you do have to accept early on you can't stay like that. You can't. It's just not sustainable. You have to weigh up. Do you want to have a life or do you want just want constant validation all the time? Now I want to have a life and I want to spend time with my partner. We couldn't go out to restaurants or anything, you know, like, so if you're living with someone, they're nearly on the journey with you. So obviously it was great to give time back to him and to my family and friends. But when you see the scale start to creep up, that can start to mess with your head. And also you've hardwired your brain to be like, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. You can't have 3 biscuits. You have to prioritize a meal to fill yourself. And now all of a sudden you're not in that mindset anymore. And it's like, no, you can have the 3 biscuits. You're not chasing fat loss anymore. You can go out and have a meal. You're not chasing, you know, photo shoot prep anymore. It's literally like trying to muddy yourself through it and trying to rewire your brain. That's what happens when you build a habit. You literally rewire your brain. So then you're trying to come out of it, you know, you're trying to brainwash yourself to be like, it's okay to live like this now. It's okay to have a drink. It's okay to have a takeaway. That's hard. It's like going against everything you've believed in for 5 months.
Yeah. So rewire, unwire, rewire again. But even that is interesting because it's the same as the work you're doing on your body. You're doing it on your mind as well. That's why I find all of this so fascinating. And I think people will be surprised to hear you mention going for a drink, going for dinner, getting a takeaway here and there. You do have a life now. You are fit, healthy. You still look fantastic. It's, you know, part of who you are. But there is freedom in that. You don't have to live a regimental life.
Yeah. So, you know, a regular calorie deficit, like you're in a calorie deficit when you're doing the photo shoot prep, and then you're just making much more, you're making many sacrifices when you're doing the photo shoot prep, which you don't have to do it as much when you're just doing a regular transformation. You just want to drop some body fat for a holiday. You could go extreme if you wanted to, but the option is there not to, you know. Like if I wanted to drop weight again, it wouldn't be near as extreme as a photo shoot prep. And I would be able to have that balance of being able to go out for a meal on the weekend or have a drink if I wanted to. You know, but you can go all in if you want. But honestly, I just think life is to be lived. And I've done that. I've done that challenge. I've overcome it. I completed it. But I couldn't live like that all year round. Like, I don't know how people do it who do it all year round. They must not have much of a social life. Like, yeah. I value my friends and family and then, you know, my relationship. And it was just a temporary period in my life and I have to accept that.
You mentioned earlier originally wanting to have a look at how you looked physically because you were had a public platform, you were coming out on stage and it was one less thing for people to talk to you about or to slag you about online. Have you had any negative comments since you have gone on this transformation journey?
Well, when I done the 9 week one last year, I was very quiet about it on my social medias because I was afraid I would actually, you know, get called out for like, oh, you're encouraging eating disorders and stuff. And it's not like if you're doing it in a controlled manner, you're doing it with a coach and you can get back to normality and you're not pushing it on people. It's not like, so I was more vocal about it this time around and a lot of people followed me and the support was immense. It was just lovely on photo shoot day. I just had so many people following my journey and I inspired so many people as well. I didn't get many negative comments. I had one or two that were like, those pictures are photoshopped. And I was like, muscle can't be photoshopped, you know. I didn't. If anything, I inspired a lot of people to say, people who don't believe in themselves, because that is a big part of it. People can't believe in themselves. They don't believe that they can achieve a transformation. They don't believe they're capable. They use those I can't statements. But I was very transparent about who I used to be. And this is who I wanted to be. And I became that person, you know. And you can achieve anything if you put your mind to it. You really can. I mean, look, I was very shy in school. I'm on stage making a living, making people laugh now. I was the laziest person you could ever come across. And now I'm, you know, the gym is part of my identity and eating properly is part of my identity.
Yeah, well, look, I absolutely love your content. You have a book coming out, one for the girlos. And if you pre-order at Easons, you can win tickets to the Vicar Street gig in October. So do check that out. And you can follow Enya Gizalaf, as she said, for all her comedy stuff and at Coach Enya for all of her coaching tips and how she lives her life. And Below the Bar is the name of your brilliant podcast too. And you keep doing what you're doing. I'm loving watching. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
So that's it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, to Simon Keane and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.